This is Bronson Hermuth coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm sitting with Steve Cropper. So how did Booker T and the MGs come together?
Well, basically it started with a search for a new rhythm section. And during the Marquees tour, we got to go do Dick Clark, and Atlantic kind of helped sponsor some of the tour. And we went all over. I think we opened up in St. Louis. We went all up in Detroit and Chicago, came down through Philadelphia, did Dick Clark. And then we went out on the coast and we did Myrtle Beach and Virginia Beach. And then we came back through Atlanta. And then we wound up for a 3-week stint at the Show Bar in Bossier City, Louisiana. And on the second week, I had just about had it with these crazy guys out of high school. I mean, they were just, I don't know, they were always pulling pranks and just being guys, you know, but I was a little more business than that. And so on a break, Packy Axton, Charles Axton, our tenor player, and he was also the son of Estelle, who owns Stax Records, with Jim Stewart, her brother. And she had given me a job in a record shop, and I wanted to be close to that studio. I really missed that whole summer. Took me away from being in a studio, and that's where I really enjoyed myself and had a love for it. And Packy and I were in the bathroom, and I looked at him and I said, "You've been wanting to be a leader of this band since we got out of high school." I said, "It's yours." And he said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "I'm catching the first bus out of here tomorrow." And he said, "Man, you can't do that." And I said, "Watch me.
So
I'm
you
out
quit
here.
While you're standing in the bathroom."
And I did. I went and got a bus ticket. I caught a bus and I headed back to Memphis. And I asked his mom if she'd give me my job back, and she said yeah, and I enrolled in Memphis State again and went back to school. And so in answer to your question about Booker T and the MGs, we were looking for a rhythm section, and we had been after Al Jackson for a long time, and we had Louis Steinberg play bass and Al Jackson, and we'd had two or three different piano players, and then we had the horn section. So forth. Most of those guys, along with our guys in the band, the Marquees, played on the record last night. And so we were in dire need of a good piano player on a regular basis that we could salary and get him there. So Floyd Newman, our baritone player, he said, "I don't know if you know Booker T or not, Booker T Jones, but he said he is an excellent organ and piano player. What I didn't know at the time that his main instrument was trombone. Always has been. But he had played on a session down there playing baritone, and I found this out years later. So Floyd was actually trying to protect his gig because he's afraid Booker was so talented that he was going to get his baritone gig. Now, he told me that many, many years later. So I went over to Booker's house and found out where he lived, went over there and knocked on the door, and his mom came to the door, and I asked to see him, and he was back in the den, back there playing guitar, believe it or not. And I told him what we needed and what we wanted, and I think Booker was just 16 at the time. And getting ready to graduate from high school. And so I told him what we needed, and he said, "Well, yeah, I'll come down and talk to you." So he and Jim Stewart got together on what a weekly draw would be and all that, and so Booker T went to work for us. And not too long after that, we were booked for a session on a Sunday afternoon on an off day. And a guy, you may know the name, Billy Lee Riley. And we were supposed to do a demo session. Billy was thinking about joining Stax, or Jim had talked to him about maybe doing a record for us. And, of course, he had already had some success. But anyway, he didn't show up for the session. And we were just jamming around on some blues stuff. And what we didn't know is that Jim, you know, was already ready to do the session, and he liked what he was hearing. He just reached over and pushed the record button. So we were just jamming on this blues stuff. And so we got through, and we're laughing and all that. And Jim gets on the talkback, and he says, "Hey, guys," he said, "come in and listen to this." And we go, "What? You recorded that?" And he said, "Yeah, come and listen to it." So we're listening to it back. We're going, "You know, that ain't bad." And Jim says, "Well, look, guys," he said, "if we decided to put this out on a record, have you got anything you can put on a B-side?" And we looked up dumbfounded. We didn't really know he was serious. But I looked at Booker and I said, "You remember that riff you played me a couple of weeks ago?" And it was actually, I think, a riff for a vocal song, you know. And it was a pretty good riff. And he said, "Yeah, I think so, you know." So we went down to the studio and started playing this riff and goofing around with it. And came up with a little format, you know, two verses and a solo and whatever. I was doing this thing for a solo in the middle, these little, I call them little chink licks, you know, these little quick stab licks. And Jim suggested, he said, "Why don't you put that on the intro and then just do a regular solo, you know, for the middle?" And we went, okay. That was the take, one or two takes later. And we had Green Onions, which has been a been a monster for a long time.
Man, I jumping way, way ahead, 2007 Grammys Lifetime Achievement Award. I watched that on YouTube. I watched it, man. And then I watched one from the original, back in the original in the day, you know, when you guys were so young. And, I mean, it was just like almost right on, man. I mean, you know, it was incredible. That had to be quite an honor up there.
Oh, it was. It's amazing. And, you know, we all reach a point where we look at our career and go, well, that's over. It's been a fun ride, you know. But when people pay tribute to you and so forth, and we can do it as a group of people, it's just – it's great.
What? How did the MGs happen? Where did the MG come with it?
Well, I think we stuck to our guns. You know, all these people are coming out of the closet now and just saying, well, yeah, I lied for 400 years, and now I've decided to say, yeah, I cheated. You know, but it really was. We had a lot of people try to pull from us what the real situation was, and I think it's enough time now. It can't do any damage to anybody, but. We grew up in an era, in that time, there were so many groups that were named after cars. There were the Cadillacs, the Eldorados, you know, the Triumphs, the
right.
This, that, and the other, okay? And so Chip Smoman, who was the engineer and a writer and a guitar player down at Stax, had an MG. And we thought, hey, we'll name it, let's call it the MGs, you know? And when Atlantic sent a letter to MG, I guess it was over in Europe, they said they didn't want to be involved with the music business or an R&B situation. So Atlantic called us back and said, hey, guys, we can't get a license agreement with MG or whoever. What, I don't know what the company was. Was it Triumph or
I don't even
something, know. Whatever it was. Not important. You're going to have to change the name of the group. So that's what happened. It originally started out as a car. And so we decided, because Booker was the main guy on the keyboard, and we call it Booker T, and the MGs. And so we said, what's that going to be? And so somebody said, stood for Memphis Group. Now, Doug Dunn has a different idea. He says it stands for musical geniuses. But and
both,
that's good coming
both
from Duck.
Work, though, right?
Because coming from Duck, you get the humor from it. You know, he's not being serious. He's just being funny. So he said, no, it stands for musical geniuses. So anyway. But Booker T and the Memphis Group is what it stands for, and there was three of us, so it was the MGs.